Treasury, Social Security, VA, and other government agencies will never contact you by phone, email, or text for this information.
Watch your accounts carefully.
Don't be a victim. Visit stopfraud.gov or call 877-ID-THEFT to learn more.
You're listening to radio station WUSB. It's 6... Oh, I'm sorry, WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, and it's time for Off the Wall. It's another Tuesday evening, and you're tuned to WUSB, where the radio program Off the Wall has just begun. This is Emmanuel, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, good evening. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Only on for an hour, Kyle, so we'll need to speak a little faster than that.
We're live.
We're live now, on the air. Actually, we're in delay, but we're as live can be. and here to speak with people.
Isn't that something?
It is something. No, you know, radio is a miracle. It really is. It's the gift that keeps on giving. And that's why everybody wants to take it away. Yeah, we had a bit of excitement at the other radio station. In fact, it's still going on. Some of you might be following that. Boy, what a whirlwind it's been over the past day or two.
Yeah, very busy.
Very busy indeed, and it's going to continue for a while. For those who don't know, there was a lockout, another lockout at WBAI in the city.
I think a lot of what was already going on just became more of, rose to the surface, so to speak, as far as people wanting to understand what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's one way of putting it. It's
we saw a lot of it coming, I think.
We did. We did see it coming. Don't know where it's going exactly, but you know, if you looked at all the papers yesterday, all the newspapers had stories about this. In fact, some TV stations had stories about it too. Not many radio stations, but only because they don't really do news anymore. But everybody wanted to report on the death of the radio station after 60 years, and it was very sad. We were going through much of the day trying to figure out what we should do because, you know, as you know, we have a show on that station on Wednesday nights. And it really kind of seemed like it was over. And then literally, I wouldn't say at the last minute, just late at night, we got word that there was an injunction filed that was granted that basically pushed the people who are taking over the station out and restored the station to the station, I guess is the best way to put it.
The local community.
The local community, but also the people who ran the station, the
yes,
people who are running the station. And it was quite disturbing because there were so many false reports going out there that we knew were false. But you can't really fix that if you don't have a radio station to broadcast from. What happened was, I guess it was pre-dawn hours on Monday. This is how these things usually go. I'm not going to say jackbooted thugs from Pacifica. Another way to say that? representatives of Pacifica came.
I was thinking scallywag, but whatever.
That's another word you could use.
Go ahead.
They came in and basically notified people that they were no longer allowed to be there. And they changed the locks, put up signs, and started piping in a national feed. A national feed that I did not know existed. Pacifica Across America, I think is what it's called. I never knew this existed. It's like elevator music for radicals or something.
I don't
know what you call it.
It's also kind of like Air America, like the international propaganda that is put forth often out in other territories. It just felt
it's not bad. I mean, I was actually listening in the daytime, and I heard something that I thought was really fascinating. Turns out there's another radio host out on the West Coast that called Iran during the hostage crisis. And here at WUSB, we did the exact same thing. We have recordings. We put them online. I had never heard these other recordings before. They were much better than ours, much more of a conversation. But I recognized the guy that he was talking to in the embassy in Tehran. I recognized his voice. We talked to that same person. Didn't have nearly as good a conversation, but it was just weird to hear that. And I learned something by listening. No, there's good material out there. Don't get me wrong. And you could have a 24-hour-a-day feed of Pacifica archives and material that is produced. That's how strong the network is. But at night, what they do is, and this really kind of rubs me the wrong way, they play this music, and, you know, it's not the worst music in the world, but it sounds like a computer is playing this. Even the announcer sounds like a computer. It's not something that makes you think. But the thing that really gets me more than anything else is the title. It's called Undercurrents. Now, if you remember, Undercurrents was an award-winning program on Pacifica. Public Affairs, Robert Knight was the host, did all kinds of corruption and politics. And to have the same title be simply this music you don't have to think about and just something to have on in the background, that to me is an insult. Use another title, for God's sake. It's the same network.
This morning, I think they were playing a documentary about former Pacifica leadership, someone that had killed themselves.
Lou Hill killed himself. He was the founder of Pacifica.
Okay, yeah. Then they were playing some kind of piece on that for quite a while this morning.
Well, I mean, and it's interesting. There's this great history and so many things that, you know, we do see eye to eye on. But as is the case with the left on many occasions, it doesn't take much to have people at loggerheads and to make somebody that agrees with you 98% of the time your deadly enemy because they disagree with you on that other 2%. In this particular case, I'm not really sure, you know, what all the details are as far as who wants what from whom. But I do know that there is this hostility towards New York from other parts of the network. They are under the false assumption that the New York station is bleeding the network dry. And if you look at the statistic, that is not true. That's not what's happening at all. In fact, WBAI's listenership has gone up, and the other stations have not. We can point fingers all the time. There's five stations that are owned by the network in total, and we can say which one is better than the other, but what's the point in that? However, what they are doing is attempting to loot WBAI and, I guess, use the funds from eventually selling the license to fund the rest of the network. We've heard this before. This is nothing new. There are people who want to do this. And if you look at what's been going on with the National Board, you can see that they are setting it up so that they can do that without even having the majority, which is pretty awful. So as I said, there was a court hearing. I didn't even think this was possible. That's how defeated I was last night. There was actually an appeal to a court that was granted, and Pacifica was ordered to give the station back. And as of this morning, people were able to go into the station again. But when they went into the station, they found that the station was pretty much looted by Pacifica. They had come in, they had taken equipment out. We have this, every radio station has something called EAS, which is Emergency Alert System. It's an annoying tone you hear with all kinds of tests and things that they're doing all the time. And occasionally, it's something good like a tornado or, you know, a hurricane or something.
But it's essential and it cuts in.
It is mandatory. You cannot broadcast without that. They took it. They took it away. So the station can't go back on the air. So if you go there now, you will still hear that sanitized, pre-recorded, satellite-fed, I'm not going to say drivel because, like I said, the content is good at times, but it's not real people. You're not sitting at a microphone like we are right now at 6:12 p.m. in Stony Brook in 2019. I have no idea what day it is.
It's like the surrogate playlist for places that are not actually representing the local community.
October 8th it is. Okay, thank you.
Yes, it's the 8th today, Tuesday, the
8th. It's John Lennon's birthday tomorrow.
I didn't know that.
No, you see, and you wouldn't find that out on the satellite feed either, because that could air at any time. It's not supposed to have any kind of, you know, today's a windy day. Today is one of these raw days in the Northeast, and it's great, you know? We can say that. We can say that that's what's happening right now because we're live.
Yeah.
But the pre-recorded canned stuff, no, you can't ever say that. And you shouldn't ever say that because it's designed to be played any time. So that's what's on right now because the station can't go back on the air because it was basically pillaged. And that is disgusting. And it's also in violation of the court order. So
I think they took files. They actually physically removed the installation of each microphone, which I thought was particularly, I think, a symbolic gesture, just basically yanking the mics and just having their way to make it as hard as possible for that facility to be used and really spitefully. I mean, it seems like they planned a lot of this in advance to seize that, as well as, I think, the domains, which is something that's ongoing. I think people are monitoring that.
We got to look into what's up with the website, who's got control over that. That's not some of the email addresses have been disabled. People have been purged from mailing lists. All of this within a few hours. This is not how good guys operate. It's
well
not.
Well put. Yeah.
These people are doing bad things. And I think that's becoming obvious just based on their actions. We've uncovered memos, we've uncovered all kinds of documents through the court filing that point this out. There's all kinds of things we can go into.
Well, and to say nothing of a lot of the support for people that are just finding out about this, mm-hmm. and as I was kind of alluding to, that it brings in a lot of the other sort of issues that have been going on long term. We've been talking about, moves at the station. It's been in different locations. It's now in a really nice location. And what we've been talking about constantly, basically updating people, is how far along the actual studio environment was coming. There's new stuff being built and a lot of progress at the station. You wouldn't know this.
That's the thing. They just built a new studio. A new studio that overlooks Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. They poured all this money into it, all this effort. It's there now, only to have somebody come in, yank all the microphones out. And the other thing, they just started a fund drive. A week into a fund drive. If you're interested in financial survival, why would you yank a fund drive in the middle? It's bringing in something like $10,000 a day. This isn't about that. This is about control. This is about power. This is about taking something over. This is about...
There was a lot of speech issues about carts and stuff weeks prior, which we had talked about and was in the mix as well. So there were these sort of targeted attributes of basically it being about control and sending down edicts and threats.
Yeah, there was bullying going on.
Trying to get people fearful and sort of disillusioned.
Right. And we challenged this on the air. We were aware of that going on. We didn't think it would come to this, at least not at this stage, but it did. I'm very proud of the way people have responded on both our team and the many other teams at that radio station.
As well as the public.
Yeah, the public has been amazing. So much support, so much appreciation. Just seeing how even the mayor of New York stepped in and said, boy, this is a tremendous loss. The thing that gets me is that too many people are speaking as if it was a done deal. And I guess I didn't know the history of WBAI because this has happened at least three times before. They always bounce back. I should say we always bounce back because we're a part of it. We always bounce back one way or another. Now, I'm not saying, you know, we should just not worry about this. This is something significant to worry about, and we don't have control over the airwaves yet.
It is ongoing. They have patched in their own feed and been, I think, changing equipment at the transmitter site. This is a lot of the stuff that the engineers and the local community staff will be looking into as well as some of the legal proceedings and going back and looking at what actually occurred.
We have, as mentioned, the show that we do Wednesday nights from there. And we assumed when this court order came through that we'd be back on the air. However, because of the vandalism that took place during the hijacking, I think those are two words I can use accurately.
Coup. I've been hearing coup
well,
a little bit.
Well, coup is, we've used that word many times.
That's charged, yeah, but this is definitely a hijacking.
But because of the condition things are in, we don't know if the station will be under our control by tomorrow. And if that's the case, we're planning a program for the what's known as the Commons. It's a cafe downstairs. You mentioned the building, Kyle, and we've never had a building this amazing.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It is just spectacular. I was getting towards that. I got a little bit distracted.
And for Pacifica to come in and tell the landlord, who has been so great to us.
Very cool.
She is amazing.
Yeah.
To tell her that, no, you know, rent it out to somebody else. We're not going to pay you anymore. That is terrible. You are not only hurting the listeners, you're not only hurting the station, now you're hurting independent people who have gone out of their way to help and support what we stand for. That is callous. That is wrong. And that is something we are going to fight against with every fiber of our being.
Yeah, they've hosted so many events. A lot of them occur in tandem or in at least connection to community members and people that are a part of the radio station and other organizations that are in the building. There are other publishers and people that occupy that space, but mm-hmm. It's really it's a tremendous loss because, I mean, we've seen a lot of that stuff grow. I mean, there's a full cafe restaurant there, and you know, you get your fair trade coffee and go into these you know, community meetings, people working on repairing things. I think the Fixers Collective works there occasionally, and of
all
course kind, the radio station.
It is just this amazing thoroughfare of thinkers, and you know, you think New York City, this can't happen, but guess what? It happened. It's an amazing crossroads where all these people just are coming together, exchanging ideas. The radio station, perfectly situated right there. against all odds, thriving, doing well in the middle of Brooklyn. To just yank that away is just shows that you have no clue as to what's actually going on.
They just finished building out the break room and a lot of the producers, like production studios. There's also cubicles so that community members and producers can come in and work. You know,
right.
It's a vital hub of a lot of really good work that's going on, and it's bringing in interest and listenership slowly but surely, and that's part of what the fundraising efforts would have been talking and
yeah,
pointed towards.
But for tomorrow, what we had planned was a gathering because we didn't have the radio station. Then we got the radio station back, so we canceled the gathering, but now it seems like we might not have the radio station because of the vandalism that took place and the theft of the I'm sorry, that's my phone. It just means that news bulletins are coming in. Isn't that a cool ringtone? I don't think anybody can identify what that is. So now that it seems like we might not have the station back, we are reinstating, for now anyway, the gathering that we were going to have at the cafe, where we can seat about 100 or so people. If we can't do a radio show, we can at least stream something through some service from there.
We'll also be recording and archiving it as
exactly,
usual.
Exactly, yeah.
And
it's happening at the cafe, which is it's located at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. We're going to start that at around 7, I think. Our show is usually on at 8, but, you know, for this we might need 2 hours, so 7 to 9. It's kind of informal because if we're not really on the radio, we don't have to start right on time. But maybe we'll be back. By tomorrow, we'll know. So keep tuned to the 2600 website and the Twitter feed and all that, and we'll let people know. But if you're in Brooklyn, by all means, stop by, say hi, and I guess it's going to be kind of like a radio show.
Absolutely. And, you can find out more. I'm sure the Commons as well as WBAI's social media platforms are going to be talking about the details of how people can get involved. And I'm sure there will be a little bit of coverage as well. And definitely keep following some of the news stories. I would hope that a lot of the enthusiasm for, you know, what a lot of – and wistfulness that was occurring yesterday with – news about the station. I hope a lot of that energy goes into covering what the local community is actually standing up to,
mm-hmm.
In the face of what appears to be who and what appears to be going on at the helm of the Pacifica Foundation. And frankly, I think there's an interest in looking at other options and how to disentangle and really keep a lot of that local production and community radio thriving, or at least surviving, especially in the face of these kinds of challenges.
Yeah, and the thing to remember is that with community radio, you can always make it better. You can always become involved. You can always do something different. It's the doors are open. We walked in those doors, and they were completely welcoming to us, where there was never a hacker radio show before, and we started one, and it's thriving now. There are so many other stories like that. Democracy Now!, the program you just heard, came from WBAI. There would not be a Democracy Now! Without that radio station. So think of all the other programs in the future that can potentially exist because that outlet exists for people to get involved in. You're hearing all kinds of negativity as far as financial ruin and incompetence. And there are things like that as far as examples where things don't go exactly right. But to say, yeah, we need to destroy this because things didn't go exactly right, that is the worst thing you can possibly do. And so many of the stories that are being circulated aren't true. You heard about the fiasco involving the Empire State Building, having the WBAI transmitter on top of there, paying something like $60,000 a month to have the transmitter up there. Can you imagine how much that is? What a stupid decision it was to put a transmitter there, to have all that money being funneled into this when you can get another site just in Times Square for $12,000. What kind of bonehead does that in the first place? You know who does that? Pacifica. They're the ones that signed the lease. And it's called an escalator lease, which basically means that they're guaranteed, I think it's a 9% increase every single year, and you're tied into a contract for something on the order of 20 years. That is a situation WBAI found themselves in that they couldn't get out of. Not because of anything they did, because their network put them in that position. Same thing with having studios on Wall Street. Can you think of a more expensive sounding street? Wall Street. They were very nice studios, but we couldn't afford that. Pacifica's decision. It wasn't BAI's decision. Pacifica had to, WBAI had to pay for it, and WBAI got the blame when they couldn't pay for it. So, you know, what you're hearing isn't exactly true. There's a lot of incompetence going around in many, many levels. And when things are going badly, the blame tends to get pointed at one particular place, and that's just not fair.
Yeah, I would definitely say there's a lot of revisionism and a lot of a lack of context, so a lot of mischaracterizations of the full history and what was at play and has been. So I don't know. I just would, yeah, as you said, caution people to really educate themselves about what is going on and at these different levels it's hard to imagine that it would have been lost so quickly and without permission, without input from like producers, the community members. I think a lot of us are still getting ballots and so on, you know, at the election structures that WBAI has participated in and gotten installed and the voting process that's been in place to support ownership from people that have been a part of and built this community. So it just the hasty attempt at hijacking this, I think, has been, I don't know, really obvious.
Yeah, and I think I think maybe the instigators forgot what they were up against. We forgot that there are so many talented people that can fight back, people in the legal field, people who have been doing broadcasting for a long time, people who are well-versed, people who are activists, people who know how to reach others. And that is working. That's something that's having an effect, and we need to keep fighting. And, you know, if Pacifica thinks they can't handle this radio station, they think it's a drain on their resources, which I disagree with, and the numbers would tend to – depends how you manipulate the numbers. Numbers can be manipulated in many ways. If you add all the debt that was accrued because of these bad decisions, such as putting the station on the Empire State Building and getting offices on Wall Street and all the things that Pacifica decided for WBAI, if you make that a BAI expense, well then – yes, it seems like they're draining the network, but it also seems like they were set up to fail by the network. So you have to ask yourself what's really going on here. But, you know, if Pacifica doesn't want to handle the station anymore, I looked at the monthly budget, and that's less than what is brought in with the fundraisers. So we could survive without them if that's what they want. But to be put in this position and to be demonized, it's not right. And to actually put a radio station like WBAI under threat of extinction, it's unconscionable. You will never get a radio station like that again. It's in the middle of the FM dial. And if you know something about the FM dial in the States, below 92 is non-commercial, above 92 is commercial. So you can operate a commercial radio station there, meaning that any frequency above 92 is worth a lot more than a frequency below 92. We're 90.1, so, you know, we're not worth anything. But, no, that's not true. But, you know, 99.5, which is where they are, yeah, that's right in the middle of the commercial band, and you could get a pretty penny to convert the license over to a commercial one and sell it to some other entity. So
a lot of what's really obvious about how this was done is the the extent to which they tried to get people to submit content for review, but also to spin it as having reopened.
Yeah, you know, that was a weird press release. If you read it, WBAI is reopening, and that is how they described locking the station down and going to a satellite feed of disembodied voices. And, you know, when you're speaking like that in these Orwellian tones, You must know you're wrong. You must know you're on the wrong side of history when you have to do things like that.
And a lot of the discussion and really threats to the management and to producers about political speech jeopardizing anything there, a lot of that was precipitated with an interest in protecting the station. But what they really mean is protecting the license so they could resell it. And that's sort of goes along with this rebranding to try to spin what they were physically doing to staff and to the technical side of operations. So anyway, that's just something that came to me as you were speaking.
Well, this is a fluid situation. It's still ongoing. There'll obviously be more details as days progress. And we don't know what's going to happen. We could still lose the whole place. They could still prevail. And hopefully people will stand up. You know, I know there's a lot of folks out there who say, oh, radio's irrelevant and you just do a podcast and all that. But let me ask you, if radio is so irrelevant, why are they always trying to take it away from us? You know, when did they come for a podcast? They don't care about that because that is something that is easy to set up on your own. Radio is something that reaches a whole lot of people you will never reach on a podcast. Podcast is something you search for, you know what it is you want. Radio, you know, you find things by accident, and that's the beauty of it. That's the magic of it. So many things I've heard on the radio, and I'm sure everybody listening has as well. Maybe it's even this show. You know, just randomly tuning, and you find something, and you either stick around or you tune away quickly in disgust. I'm not sure which applies today, but that is what broadcasting is, and the rest is narrowcasting. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, we use podcasting for this show and the other show as well, but radio is the true magic. You never know who's out there. You know, with podcasting, you can tell. You can tell where people are. You can get their information. You can find their IPs. You can find what country they're in. I mean, you know, unless they're using VPNs and things like that, but most people aren't.
It's true, though. It's passive.
Yeah, but radio, you just turn on the radio, and it's hard to tell. It's really almost impossible to tell who's out there, how many people are listening. It could be blaring the radio really loud, then people know you're listening. But we don't know. There could be two people listening on the radio. There could be 50,000. There's no way we will ever know.
They're literally receiving waves. And the importance also of being able to produce freeform, especially in a very congested market, instead of just selling or having a religious converts or whatever else frequency might be used for, the power in being able to express ideas and share information, especially cogent breaking information, maybe alongside an EAS alert, but that's all crucial to having a greater social dialogue, and that in and of itself affects culture and politics and the sort of greater possibility in our world. So it'd be great to see this carry on, and we'll definitely be updating people in the future.
And you can write to us, otw@2600.com, with your comments, and keep listening tune to both radio stations, see what's going on. You can follow the 2600 Twitter feed. I know there's lots of updates being posted there, and, of course, the 2600 website as well. And we'll see what happens tomorrow. Oh, but now it's time for our... You know, we haven't titled this bit yet. The film forum. No, that's the name
picture,
of the theater.
Yeah.
It's what motion picture corner.
Best picture.
Best picture.
Best.
Best picture of the year, of the week. You know, your comments and suggestions are welcome. This is not our strong suit. But basically, what we're doing is we're focusing on Academy Award-winning films from the very beginning until now, but it's going to take us a long time to get to now. We're up to 1959, and in fact, we didn't even have time to see the foreign film winner, so we only saw the American film winner, which was Ben-Hur, and since that's 3 hours and 30 minutes long, that's why we didn't have time for the other film. So the only film we have to look at today is Ben-Hur. But boy, there was a lot to look at in that film, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So you got your Judah... Ben-Hur, Judah Ben-Hur.
Judah Ben-Hur is his full name.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a saga. It's a saga. It's very, very lengthy, and it basically, it starts with the birth of Christ.
Yeah,
and the nativity, yeah.
They never say his name. They never say his name, but there he is.
You don't see his face very much.
And
either.
I was worried he's going to take over the story. I was worried that I got tricked into seeing a Christ film.
It's just kind of a light, it just gives you context, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that's really the purpose of it.
It's kind of like Life of Brian, where they don't say his name there either, but you see him in the distance, you know, giving his blessed are the cheesemakers or whatever that speech was about.
Right.
Here it's kind of the same thing. But you thought going into Ben-Hur that it was all about chariot racing.
I thought that was the entirety of it, is that it's just about chariots and you know, it was like a Roman Rocky or something, you know?
Roman Rocky. Wow. Yeah, I mean, in a way, I guess it was.
Yeah.
But
it was not.
There was a chariot race, a very exciting chariot race, but only about 10 minutes long. But I think, you know, if it wasn't for that chariot race in the second half, there was an intermission, took up two Blu-ray discs. If it wasn't for that scene, I don't think it would have won. I don't think people would have stayed, because it was really exciting.
It was high action, I guess I can reveal, it's up front when the race starts, that the, I guess the villain, the antagonist in the film, he's got a Greek chariot, and it's got spikes on it.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, high tension, because he's out destroying chariots. That's all I'm going to say.
Four horses, and he had four black horses, and the hero had four white horses.
There were no mixed horse teams.
No.
All horses had to be the same color in each team.
And they weren't the only ones racing. There were about, I think, eight or nine others that were racing as well.
But it was beautifully shot, and you're right there. It's just incredible effects and. But yeah, that I think helped with the pacing, because a lot of the setup and the early story, as you're seeing his life and trials growing up, there's a lot of dialogue. It's a little bit slower, and you have to kind of follow and see his travels and what he goes through.
Well, what I should point out too also is that the protagonist is a Jew. And the his friend, they actually grew up together, is a Roman occupier of his land, but they're friends. And this Roman occupier comes back with a very high position, and Ben-Hur greets him on his return, and they're very happy to see each other. That lasts about 10 minutes before they get into a big argument about who owns the land and who's going to control things. Very much like things are going in that very same region right now.
And imagine Judah basically disagrees with his people being wiped out.
What's the other guy's name?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Judah and Quintus.
That's his name, Quintus. No way, that's not right. Let me see that.
I'm so impressed how you remember all of these details.
Well, I can't remember his name, and I want to get that right, so...
No, it's like you have a photochemical memory.
Female servant, merchant, Masala, that's it. Yeah, Masala is the other guy's name.
Oh, that's the chariot.
That's the main villain guy, yeah, his friend.
Right.
They grew up together. In fact, there's a gay subplot that Charlton Heston, who plays Ben-Hur, angrily denies, but a lot of people seem to think that that's actually in there.
Oh, yes, you're right. The antagonist is Masala. I was thinking of Sheik Ilderim, who trains the Judah
right.
To compete.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
And it's a betting. There's a betting thing going
Masala
on.
Masala and Ben-Hur are friends. They basically get into this bitter argument soon after they're reunited about who is going to control what. Masala wants Ben-Hur to kind of feed him information and work with him, and Ben-Hur refuses to work against his people. Now, what I found particularly interesting about this was how there was sort of this unspoken bond between Arabs and Jews in that region against the Romans. The Romans were the evil occupiers, and both the Arabs and the Jews bonded together to fight that, to battle in various ways. And as you mentioned, the trainer for his chariot was a sheik, And that was sort of the climax of the film. But there was just so much in there that you could apply to current day struggles and realize that, you know, we haven't really changed at all. The same things are going on. Just the cast members have changed a little bit. You know, now it's Palestinians being subjugated by Israelis, but it's the same things are happening, and it's kind of depressing to realize that. But it's also kind of enlightening when you see that these people don't have to be enemies. They have so much in common, and for that, I thought it was pretty enlightening.
And have cooperated before.
Yes.
So
what else did you take out of the whole thing? It's 3.5 hours long. It didn't drag. It kept going for, it's pretty full of action.
In many different scenes, many different locations, a lot on location. And, of course, the reproduction we were looking at was beautifully restored mm-hmm. and in full 60 millimeter, I believe. 60 millimeter.
60 millimeter.
Glory. Yes, it was quite a sight, but they had a lot of local production, as well as, I think, some sound stages, many... just beautiful sets and enormous sets, as you can imagine, having so many horses and in reproductions of amphitheaters and the Colosseum.
They built the biggest set on record at the time, anyway, for the chariot race. It was something like 300 acres. It was huge. And it was overseas, I think the Rome studios of MGM. Do you know this is the last MGM film ever to win Best Picture? And MGM was about to go bankrupt, and this film was basically their Hail Mary, and it paid off. So that's the only reason we have MGM today is because of this film, apparently.
Yeah, and their casinos, I guess.
Yeah, it's a whole other business venture. But yeah. There were all kinds of other things, too. There was some slavery going on where Ben-Hur basically... Okay, what happens? And this is a lesson that you can learn from this film, is always take care of your roof. And the reason I say that is because a vital part of the film happens when one of the governors is walking down the street, and Ben-Hur and his sister are looking at the parade. This is after Ben-Hur has a big fight with Masala. They're looking at the parade going down, and they're on top of their roof. And his sister leans on the roof, and the stone on the roof is loose and falls, and it hits the governor. And, of course, that leads to a whole big thing where they, assume that it was an attack done on purpose. Masala even goes up and checks the roof himself, finds that it is, in fact, loose, and everything that they're being told is true. And even though he has this information, he chooses to withhold it and put Ben-Hur into slavery, put his sister and mother into prison. And the reason he did that, his explanation for doing this, was so that people would know that he would have no hesitation to punish one of his friends, and that way they would never defy him. Even though he's punishing him on false grounds, he wanted to send that message. And because Ben-Hur had the audacity to argue with him and not cooperate, he has no moral problem doing this.
Yeah, it was a retribution. So he's he made that choice. And, they suffer in prison and eventually develop leprosy.
Yeah, what's the deal with leprosy anyway? Because what happened was they were in a prison for something like 3 years, his sister and mother. And Ben-Hur does this whole saga of being on a slave ship. Where he wins his freedom by rescuing this guy who's a powerful Roman, who then adopts him as a son. And it's really kind of amazing how he's able to pull all that off.
He then becomes of higher rank.
And he comes back and says, "Hey, Masala, look at me now.
Yeah.
And you're going to release my sister and my mother tomorrow, or I'm going to come back here and insult you even further." And so he does that. But when his underlings go to the prison, they look with horror at what's in the prison. Nobody has apparently checked on these people in 3 years. They just keep putting food through the grate in the door. But when they and the thing that bothered me, you never see the face really that evokes such horror in the person that's looking at their faces. But they have leprosy, and they basically have to be taken to a leper's colony. Or they choose to go to a leper's colony.
It's basically a cave.
Yeah, and they insist that Ben-Hur not know that they're still alive. He's told that they're dead at their request because they want him to remember them as they were, which I think is kind of silly, but that's what they choose to do. And, of course, he's very angry at Masala for what he thinks is the death of his sister and mother.
Yeah, and then I think their location is revealed when Masala is sort of, how shall we say, in a weakened state.
Yeah, after he basically, you know, that flip he did on the chariot, that wasn't intentional. That was the stuntman who actually saved himself from severe injury by pulling himself up over the lip of the chariot.
Well, it looked real.
It was real. It really happened. It was an accident. It wasn't supposed to happen, but what a great shot that was. But anyway, the thing with leprosy, so they basically, they're in a cave and people bring them food, but I don't know, how do you catch leprosy? Is it touching somebody? Is it being in the same region? There's all this fear and horror, and what has happened? I don't really see leprosy around. So did we fix that, or
I think it has to do with some necrosis and rotting of the flesh. But uh-huh. I think it is somewhat contagious.
Okay, well, I'm just as happy not to see that around this area, but it's something to learn about. I didn't really know much about that. So yeah, so they're lepers, it has sort of a storybook ending in some ways. But for the most part, it was a good story. For the most part, it was engaging. And there's one thing that I didn't buy into. All right, at the beginning, there was this whole thing where you see the stars suddenly appear in the sky, and it's like it's shining down on this barn, and all these people are coming around from miles around to see this kid that was just born. You have these three old guys on camels coming by. And
wise men.
They might have been wise. I don't know. They didn't really get into their character. I didn't buy it. It's poor storytelling. Where did the star come from? Why did the star suddenly appear at that point in time? And how does a star exactly shine down on one house? All right, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And even if it does shine down on one house, why do people care so much? Why are they all gathering from all over the place, and they're bringing presents, gifts, and bowing down? Why? You don't know who this person is. You don't know who they are. You have no idea. They could be dangerous. You're going into some stranger's house just because there's a bright light above it in the sky that came from nowhere, and it broke up the whole story. That is bad storytelling. So I'm sorry. That was the one problem I had with Ben-Hur.
There's a book you should read.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a couple parts to it. I guess you could start. We could start with the old and then go new. Uh-huh. But yeah, Old Testament, New Testament. It's the Bible.
Okay. Well, you know what? We're going to save that for next time, because that is it for the film corner. Is that what we're calling it? The film corner of the show?
I was going to call it Be Best Picture.
All right.
Be Best.
Be Best. You're not going to ruin it with that. You're not going to ruin this. No.
Be Best.
No.
All right. So.
Listeners, please help. OTW@2600.com. Help us name this segment.
It was a joke.
It's not a joke, Kyle. It's not a joke.
Are you bullying me?
No. I would never dream of it.
Of course not.
We saw a homicide investigation this week.
Yeah.
It turned things very dark very quickly. No, there was, you might have read about this, there was a local tragedy where some guy, for some reason, burst into a liquor store locally with a samurai sword and started waving it around, and the store owner shot the guy, killed him, one shot. And, you know, we heard about this and just happened to be in the area. And it was just weird seeing this, because you had this massive fire department truck, which was a command center, and then this police department truck, which was the same thing, kind of moved in, and then the fire department command center left. So it's like you have to have a command center, I guess, when this kind of thing happens, whether it's from the fire department or the police department. But then you had all these detectives, and the detectives always look the same. They always dress in these suits or raincoats, and they're just milling about. You know, it's like NYPD Blue. They're the same thing. And no matter where you go, they always dress this way. And I just wonder, when is that written down, that you have to behave this way? And also, why do you need so many of them? There were like 8 of them there. You know, so were they all investigating the same thing? Were they questioning? I mean, there weren't that many people there to question.
Yeah, I don't really know how it works.
It was just a weird scene, you know, and there weren't that many people around, but a lot of cops, By people, I mean, you know, civilians, just basically, like, they're curious
and
people
layers,
passing by.
Layers of them, like the local town and then county, and mm-hmm. then you get, as you said, investigators and other first responders. And then, of course, media.
Yeah, media was everywhere.
Other bystanders.
And, you know, we saw the editing facilities they had with them, which was, you know, pretty impressive. And then
yeah.
we saw, you know, what they produced very quickly out of all that. But it's just weird to think that something like this happens, where some guy flips out, does something like this, and then you just have this whole chain of events that unfold, because that is what happens. That is what they do. The guys with the suits show up, the command centers, the media. It's just this whole choreographed opera, I guess, that happens.
Well, it's an incident command system.
Yeah.
It's something that can be established very quickly, scaled up, and then scaled down as the situation is brought under control and the investigation is done.
And you realize, you know, while you're standing there looking at this, that the guy's body is still there inside the place, and they're still looking at all kinds of bits of evidence.
Getting stuff for the crime lab vehicle that was also there.
And you quickly forget the tragedy that happens. You know, people are there milling and being pleasant, and it's easy to forget that something really bad just happened. Later on in the day, they revealed the name of the person that was involved. And I hopped online to see if there was any history. You know, I tend to do that no matter, you know, what part of the country something like this happens. You want to know before they erase things or before it's just news stories about this event. And I found a Facebook page, and I found this guy who was basically a physical therapist, of all things, who lived in the area, had a series of setbacks, including what was described as a traumatic brain injury from a motorcycle accident. And it was just really kind of sad to see this person just becoming more angry, I guess is the word, because
bipolar dynamic.
I'm not really sure. I saw a series of posts and it was just very angry, things that we see all the time around us. But this was somebody who was posting a lot of anti-Muslim rhetoric, and for some reason he thought Muslims were the enemy of the people everywhere, that everything they did was evil and wrong and backwards and just horrible stuff like that. You saw people trying to talk him out of this, saying, hey, you're better than this. Don't buy into this conspiracy nonsense.
I think on top of that, being stubborn and right, so certain that there's no other possibility, will not consider other possibility.
Yeah, and it's, you know, on social media, it's very easy to be lured into things like this. You look back and you see someone else. You see somebody who cares about people. You see somebody who's trying to raise money for victims of a war or raising money for some charity or something like that, or just being happy. But then you see this darkness take over, where somebody is lashing out at other people who he probably has never even met or known, and just assuming they're the evil ones, whether it's immigrants, whether it's Muslims, whether it's people in a far-off land someplace, or whether it's just political opponents. It was just, you know, it was rare that he would post words of his own. He would mostly repost what other people were saying, but then he would defend it. And, I would see people trying to convince him that this was wrong, that this was hateful, and that he was better than this. But, you know, the thing that you saw developing was just him getting deeper and deeper into that. Now, I don't know how that relates to deciding to walk into a liquor store with a samurai sword. You know, it doesn't make any sense. And so many of the things don't make sense. But what does make sense is when someone is filled with hostility, hatred, bitterness, or just frustration at your lot in life, a lot of things don't make sense. A lot of things happen that don't make sense. And we need to do a better job looking out for each other. You know, I'm not saying his friends didn't do as good a job as they possibly could have, but there is so much of this going on now. So many people out there who just are getting more and more embittered. And you see it everywhere. You see it in so many places, far worse than what we see here. But we're not asking the right questions. We're not figuring out how this is happening, and we're not figuring out how to stop it, short of some massive amount of control, which is not what anybody wants.
Yeah, it points to a lot of suffering, I think. And people need to be taken seriously, not, I think, dismissed, especially when what they're saying is so troubling.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, if you listen to people, you don't dismiss them out of hand, you don't label them as this kind of a person, but you have conversations. You have, and this goes for your relatives, this goes for your former friends that you've lost touch with, this goes for the guy at the deli, this goes for anybody you happen to find yourself in a conversation with. You establish that mutual respect, you know, so that nobody feels like they're being talked down to. And then, you know, you engage in constructive dialogue and, you know, be open to being wrong, because guaranteed there's something you're wrong about as well, and be open to other people expressing views that you don't agree with, and have a conversation from there and try to steer it in a healthy place.
Yeah, be open to being challenged, because that's not to say, none of this is to say you should not challenge people, even if what they are saying is disturbing.
Yeah, I think there's so much of that going on where we're challenged and we immediately reject, dismiss, condemn. And
or just
cutting off that conversation, that is unhealthy. That is what leads to people just being on their own and being increasingly bitter.
I was going to say just looking away. We're repulsed or we recoil from it because it's annoying, or someone else will deal with it, or you don't want to engage.
Yeah, that's not the answer.
That's a trap. That's a pitfall.
It is, and it hurts us all because we lose people. We have acts of violence. We have acts that make no sense because we're not talking to each other, because we're not looking out for each other, and it's not always going to work. His friends tried to look out for him here. It certainly didn't work, but we can't give up. We can't give up on the people that we think are being misled right now, or people that we feel have lost their way. We need to always be there and let them know that we care. No matter what they say, we still care. That's what I got out of all that. It was a weird day, really weird day. Wasn't expecting to come upon a homicide scene and all those cops and media and craziness like that, and I hope I don't ever do that again. But I'm curious whether people have had similar experiences. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear your feedback, your experiences. And I guess that's it for us tonight. We're out of time. We'll hopefully be back somewhere tomorrow on the other radio station, if we're on the air, or we just might be in a big room in Brooklyn somewhere. But regardless, we'll be back here next week with more stories, more fun, and all kinds of other experiences to share. So for Off the Wall, this is Emmanuel.
And Kyle.
Good night.
Everybody got to live. Everybody got to die. Everybody got a right to feel good inside. Everybody got a high. Everybody got a low. Everybody got to be yourself, no matter where you go. You go downtown to show your face around. You got nothing that you want to hide. You want to make a friend just again and again. You want to wake up people satisfied. Well, if you take it to heart, you make it from the start. You never have to wonder why. Life is proud when you look at it right. That is something that you can't deny. Everybody got to live. Everybody got to die. Everybody got a right to feel good inside. Everybody got to have. Everybody got to love. Everybody got to be yourself. No matter where you go. Now if you trust yourself but nobody else, tell me where you're gonna go. Oh, you might as well stay all night and day at home with your radio. Now you can take it or leave it if you won't believe it, but it's all very plain to see that your sister and your brother, no matter what the color, but one big family. Everybody got to live. Everybody got to die. Everybody got a right to feel good.
Everybody got a high. Everybody got a low. Everybody got to be yourself. No matter where you go. Everybody got a will. Everybody got a way. Everybody got to listen. Everybody say. Everybody got a night. Everybody got a day. Everybody got to give. Look at everybody gonna be free. Everybody got to know. Live in harmony. Ma 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 ma. Whoa 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 whoa. Everybody got to be. Everybody so. Everybody got to live. Everybody got to die. Everybody got a right. Everybody got a high. Everybody got a low. Everybody got to be yourself. No matter where you go. All right, stay on, children.